Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, June 5th, 2017, and I am at WWDC, Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference. And with me today, I have Dave Hamilton. How are you, Dave?
I am good, I think. I have just emerged from the keynote and then the hands-on room, so I am here. And thanks for having me.
You know, I will take I am here. That counts as a win today. Brian Chaffin, how are you?
Man, I'm exhausted. Did you see what they did?
Oh, yes, I did.
Did you see how many articles we put up? We're not even done.
Yes, I did.
I just want to ask if you guys got to get up and pee in the middle of that 2.5 hour keynote, or if you did the same thing I did.
Well, I peed. I just didn't get up.
Yeah, got it.
just kidding, folks. Just kidding.
No, I heard it was likely going to be that long, just a few minutes before it started. So I made a pit stop before it began.
I know we have a lot to do here, Jeff, and I know this week is a little weird, so I'm going to jump on you here in terms of audibly. And I want to thank all of our WWDC coverage sponsors for the week, which is GigSky, Otherworld Computing, Sanebox, Riedel, and iMazing. And we'll talk a little bit more about iMazing specifically later in the episode. But big thanks to all five of those for making all of our WWDC coverage possible.
Yes, that's absolutely awesome. And as long as we're here talking about WWDC, today was the keynote day. There was so much that they announced. Hence, a 2.5 hour long event. And the very fast version is iOS 11, macOS 10.13, High Sierra, tvOS 4 or 11, watchOS 4, new MacBook Pros, new iMac Pro announced, and 10.5-inch iPad Pro announced, and Home. Is HomePod announced as well? So that's the super condensed version.
Did you count tvOS? Did you count Amazon? Did you count iOS? Did you count macOS and watchOS?
Uh huh.
Okay. Did I?
Do you even listen to this show?
No. Who are you?
Yeah. Anyhow, so that's our super condensed, super fast overview. And since we don't have that much time to talk about stuff, I'm curious. Is there a standout announcement from today's event for each of you? Those are the things that I want to hear about.
Can I start, Dave?
Please.
Go.
Okay, so first of all, the fact that MacBook Pros and MacBook Air was updated, just like the rumor said, the fact that they were updated at all, the fact that MacBook Pros have been upgraded after only 10 months, that so delights me. New iMacs, that delights me. The price points delight me. The 4K displays delight me. The iMac Pro delights me. HomePod, I am super interested in.
Cool.
And then the new watch faces in watchOS 4, like the Siri watch face. So all of those are standouts. We can't – those are my big standouts.
All right, then I'm going to ask you, how do you feel about the Mac Pro or iPad Pro? Wow, no, iMac Pro. So many products. And the reason I'm asking is because I think this looks like a killer machine, yet I look at it and I think, what can they do with the Mac Pro, which is potentially coming next year? Because this is like all-in-one everything you could possibly hope for in a pro computer. So
no, it's not everything you could possibly hope for in a pro computer. You need expandability.
Well, that's where I was going. That's okay. What I see as the extra feature that you get in a Mac Pro. You get expandability. So how do you feel about buying a pro-level computer where if the display goes out, your whole computer is kind of shot unless you have an external display to add to it? I'm totally just nitpicking on things here because I think this is a really cool machine.
I am too. The processor standpoint, the RAM allowance standpoint, those things are fantastic. It remains to be seen whether or not things like the SSD are slot replaceable. Dave, do you actually have an answer for us on that?
No, and there wasn't a whole lot of detail being provided on that. So,
right,
that I don't know.
Is that also the case? I'm being asked behind the scenes. Is that also the case for the MacBook Pro? Like, we don't know yet.
Ask that question again.
Whether or not the SSD is replaceable
on the MacBook Pro.
Yes.
I don't know the answer to that. No.
Okay.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah.
I would assume not. It's not on the model that it's replacing. So
right. Right. So, and I don't think there's a lot of layout changes to the internal hardware.
Right. Right.
Right.
Right. So that, and that's exactly what I was thinking on there. I don't think we're going to see any kind of change like that. I'm just happy to see an iterative update like this. That delights me, man. It just delights me. And
it probably delights every person that's not someone who bought a MacBook Pro at the end of last year.
Well, but we used to get that all the time. People would be like, all "Oh, thanks. I bought one." And like, I'm happy to go back to that being the problem.
No, it's right. This is right. If we rewind a year, even 8 months, and we take everyone's complaints then versus whatever complaints might happen right now, we're in a really good spot.
Yes.
And when I say we, I mean Apple is in a really good spot, especially with regards to the Mac, but not just the Mac, obviously. But they definitely are going out of their way to telegraph a commitment to the Mac and delivering on that too, which is great.
Tim called it the heart and soul of Apple. That wasn't a throwaway line. That was a deliberate. Right. Message to developers and to fans alike, but especially developers.
Mm-hmm.
Piece of hardware that I'm going to throw in here that really it shows that, I think, more than an iMac Pro, more than Kaby Lake processors, more than whatever the Mac Pro will become when that finally sees the light of day, is the fact, and I know this only affects a small subset of people, but the fact that the Mac now supports, in an Apple-blessed capacity, external GPU units is huge.
Yeah.
I know most of you listening don't care about this and will never have reason to set up a computer where you do this. But the fact that Apple is doing this for people that want to do VR, for people that want to do all sorts of highly computational stuff. I was talking with someone at a very big company that does a lot of rendering recently, and they were saying that they would develop apps to do this on their Mac, but if they wanted to run them at full speed, they would run them on an iPad Pro. Because that was the fastest GPU they could get with apps that they compiled with Xcode.
Wow.
That changes.
That just changed
today.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. It's huge. And you know, when we talk about the pro customer and Apple, that is a very, like, that's a huge barometer right there. So it's a great thing to see. I just wanted to kind of put that into context for everybody that may have just glossed over it, because frankly, you don't care for your own personal use, and that's fine. So just wanted to throw that out there.
To answer sort of the question you asked earlier, Jeff, I would happily embrace the new iMac Pro when it ships in December, or when it ships later this year, in terms of it being everything I could possibly want in a computer. I lamented going from a Mac Pro to the iMac 5K that I have, in part because of the processors and some of the other limitations of the iMac. I would be a happy prosumer iMac user with that iMac Pro. It seems amazing.
You know, if I was someone that could do what I need to do with just a desktop computer, that's the computer I would buy. I would be working out my finances right now to buy a really tricked out iMac Pro this fall.
Yeah. Of course, a really tricked out one's going to be expensive. It starts at $5,000, and that is not going to be maxed out, folks. That's going to be an expensive, and it's probably not going to all, it's not going to be with 18 cores in it at $5,000 either.
No. But most people that do that pro level work are probably okay with a regular iMac, not even an iMac Pro. I mean, this is truly, you know, a 1% type of product
that targets people that really do need and will use that level of computational horsepower.
Yeah.
So don't think that just in order to do pro work with an iMac, you have to start at $5,000 and go up from there. No, a 5K Retina iMac, it's probably going to do most of what you need, if not way more than what you need. So,
yeah, I have a feeling you're right.
But we have options, right? It's nice not to be at the top end anymore. So that's good.
Yes. Yes, that is very, 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 very true. Hey, not mentioned in our earlier list, too, is Apple made a claim that iOS is going to become the largest AR platform on the planet with the release of iOS 11. And I don't think that's an idle boast. I believe from what we saw, I believe that Apple is making a legitimate claim. And I think that that's going to shift some of the AR landscape. And more importantly, Apple is making the Mac and iPhone and iPad a legitimate AR development platform too. I mean, like those are also going to be significant things when they get finally released to the public later this year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I am very much looking forward to diving in to everything that Apple's doing with iOS 11 on the iPhone and iPad and with AR. This is the first time I've actually been genuinely interested in augmented reality for the average person.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. The little demo that they showed in the keynote they had running in the hands-on room. And it works just as well as you saw. What you saw in the keynote was truly live. It works that well. It's that smooth. Now, this is on an iPad Pro. So
sure.
Bear in mind that, you know, and I was running it on the 10.5-inch iPad Pro. But so your iPhone may or may not do it that well. I don't want to make any promises. Smaller screen, though, so it might.
You were talking, Dave, about the Wingnut AR demo, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The Wingnut AR was the game that essentially played itself, and you were the photographer, you were the camera person. I'm talking about Apple's demo where you're placing the coffee cup and the lamp and the flower on stage or on the surface of the table. Mm-hmm. But it's really cool, like how well it detects where that surface is in space. I mean, all of that is happening in real time on the device. It's pretty good. Yeah.
That's cool.
To see the code versus how much is being done by the OS. But we will find out.
Yes. Yes, we will. Hey, I'm going to interrupt what we're talking about for just a minute because I really want to talk about our sponsor today, iMazing Mini. And I love the way that Jeff Butts described it, where he called it time machine for your iPhone. Well, what a great way to describe it. So iMazing Mini, it's an app for your Mac or your PC that lets you just automatically back up your iOS devices. So it can just handle it automatically. It's doing it wirelessly. It's doing everything through your own network, so you're not sharing stuff through the cloud if you're concerned about that. And once it's set up and running, it just does its thing, and you don't have to think about it anymore. It's just simple. It's easy to use. It's a really slick, really handy little utility to have. We've tested it out, and it works exactly like it should.
Can I throw two things in here?
Absolutely.
Number one, because it's like Time Machine for your iPhone or iPad backups, it allows you to go back in time to pull an older backup. It's not like iTunes or iCloud where the only backup you have is the most recent one.
Yes. And that's just really, really cool and really handy.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that I wonder, why didn't Apple do it like this in the beginning? So,
well, that's kind of what iMazing does, right?
Yeah.
They pick up where Apple has left off, and that's an awesome thing.
Yes, it absolutely is. Also awesome, you can download this for free. You use it for free. You don't have to do any registration or anything. You just get the app and use it. And there's no secret to it. There's no surprise. You just get to use it. It's just a wonderful thing. So what you need to do is go get your copy. And to do that, just head over to the iMazing website. So just go to iMazing.com.
Actually, it's... Sorry, you have it. I wanted to make sure you had it, Jeff.
Yeah. iMazing.com/mini. Yep. I am so on top of it, Dave.
And we're all trying to make it work today. That's right.
Yep. I'm so glad you have my back. So head over to their website, iMazing.com/mini, and get your copy right away. You'll be so glad you have it because, hey, everyone should be backing up their iPhones and iPads. So thank you, iMazing Mini, for being our sponsor today. And Dave, I haven't had a chance yet to ask you, what was the standout thing from the keynote for you?
Well, I am really excited about the new UI enhancements to the iPad that come with iOS 11. The dock, the enhanced task switcher, and the drag and drop stuff. I'm very excited about that. But I kind of have to pick the HomePod because last week I started looking at all the tea leaves and figured out that this thing was a speaker for your living room and not your kitchen. And sure enough, that's what it turns out to be. At $349, I think if it delivers on what they say it's going to deliver, and with a big 4-inch woofer and 7 tweeters in there, I think it certainly has the capability to, and I don't expect Apple to fire a dud out. I think this thing's going to sound very, very good, and it's got Siri built into it, which it also makes it really interesting. You can hook them up. I got to see one. Actually, I got to see two of them, one in white and one in space gray. They don't call it black. And it's a stubby little thing. It looks like a slightly larger and, of course, round version of the Sonos Play One. And I'm excited about this. You can pair them in a stereo pair. Apple says they don't do like true surround, where if you bought four of them and wanted to put two behind you while you were watching TV, that's not something that has been announced. But that's a software upgrade if they ever would want to do that. Now, I realize buying four of these things starts to get expensive, but you know, capabilities being what they are.
You know, Dave, what I was visualizing today as I was leaving the keynote was you end up buying two. They pair with your Apple TV. So now you have stereo sound from anything you play from your Apple TV. And then at some point, Apple releases what I'll call the satellite set. And so it's two smaller speakers that don't have the same horsepower that the HomePod does. And then you set those up on the other side of the room, and they automatically create the whole surround sound thing for you.
That's possible. I mean, it's also possible they could release those satellite speakers without microphones in them because they don't need to be Siri devices. However, you need those microphones for Apple's room tuning feature because, unlike Sonos, right? Sonos has a room tuning feature, but it's all done with your iPhone, which is sort of ironic. You tune it with your iPhone, and the iPhone listens to the sound the speaker makes. It takes about a minute, and then it tunes the room. Presumably, Apple's tuning process, it plays a sound, and then it listens to your room from itself with its Siri microphones and tunes. So, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of options that they could do with this. I think in order for it to be a real success, I think they need to open it up to developers and let, just like we do on the phone and the iPad and the Apple TV, we need to let other music streaming services onto this thing.
Yes.
They have SiriKit, right? So they could, this thing runs, you know, it's got what, an A8 CPU in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it could do all of that stuff, presuming it has enough RAM in it. And I'm guessing it does. So I'm curious about the future of this. And I think, like the iPod before it, I think it will come out and only support Apple's stuff, as they have said. And then I think, like the iPod before it, if assuming it's a success and Apple tweaks it the right way they want, I see no reason why they wouldn't want to open this up, unless they want to stay in the Apple Music walled garden. But I don't think that's the right decision.
I think that Apple will use Apple Music only as the limiting feature for controlling limited availability.
Right.
And then right. You know, open it up once they're ready to start, or once they feel like they can make these in larger numbers.
Yeah, it might be a year from now that, yeah. I mean, the thing doesn't come out till December anyway. Mm-hmm. So even if, it might even be a year from December when it starts supporting extra stuff. We might hear about it at WWDC and, developers get their dev kit and that sort of thing, which would be great. I think it's great. I think Apple has the best chance of being a true Sonos competitor that we have ever seen, because no one else has ever been able to do it. This is not easy doing multi-room audio where everything is synced and you don't get dropouts is really hard. And the one thing I'm worried about with this Apple speaker, this HomePod, is it has no Ethernet port. It is doing everything wirelessly, including the syncing between two devices, and I think that's a dicey move.
So someone on CNBC pointed out that beating Sonos doesn't really matter. Sonos does a little more than $1 billion a year. For
that's correct.
A company Apple's size, beating Sonos isn't, it really is kind of almost irrelevant.
No, but yeah. Well, but they need to match Sonos in terms of the ease of use of this thing. And that's simply not easy to do. Apple, that's true. And so when I say beating Sonos or being a Sonos competitor, that's what I mean. I mean, putting out a product that works as well as Sonos does. And, Sonos has decades of experience doing this, or a decade and a little more of experience doing this. And they've learned a lot of really hard lessons along the way. So Apple needs to be a mesh wireless company in order to do this, because Sonos was the first mesh wireless company. It's just not easy.
I know that Jeff's going to start yelling at us time-wise, but it's interesting to me that you're emphasizing the music features. You're talking about this device almost exclusively as a Sonos competitor, but right. It is also an Alexa competitor.
It totally is.
But Apple did the same thing. Apple emphasized, Tim Cook, they kept talking about it as a music device. And oh, by the way, it does this Siri thing too. But boy, howdy, does it do music. Right. And that to me is a super interesting thing. It's like I'm most excited about the home assistant aspect of it. Right. I mean, it's gonna control all your stuff, all your HomeKit stuff. You can control all your HomeKit stuff remotely, et cetera, et cetera. That's important too. But you chose to emphasize differently, and Apple chose to emphasize differently. It's gonna be interesting.
Well, we already have a device from Apple that controls all my HomeKit stuff. It's called an iPhone, and it's usually not far enough for me that it doesn't hear me when I say "Hey Siri." So that's why I'm not all that excited. I mean, I think it's cool that we have, that the speaker will do this, because audible commands are the best way to control music. Like, that is the killer app for any of these voice control products.
Yes. And Brian, you're right. Except I'm not actually going to really start yelling. I'm just going to wrap up the show. So, we're out of time. Brian, thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having us, man. Exciting day. Exciting, exciting day.
Oh, very exciting day. Dave, I'm so glad that you are here as well.
Yeah, same. Thanks for having me.
Yep. And I'm so glad that iMazing Mini is our sponsor today. Head over to the website, iMazing.com/mini, and get your copy. It's free. It's worth a fortune, because it's going to save all your important data from your iOS devices. Also, thank you to our other WWDC sponsors, GigSky, Mac Sales, Riedel, Sandbox, iMazing. So glad that they're all part of the show this week. And listeners, I am so glad that you are here. We will see everyone again tomorrow.